a God who takes on flesh and is still infinite and yet finite, a God who is everywhere present and yet one place at one time, a God who knows all things and yet somehow doesn't?
Welcome to the Lunch Break Hymn Sing, a podcast dedicated to the rediscovery of hymns both ancient and modern, and the authors who penned them. We're glad you decided to spend your lunch break with us. We pray that you are encouraged by the content of each episode, and we hope that you share this podcast with your friends and family. And be sure to leave us a 5-star review. Now, let's dig into today's episode. So the last time, Ben, that you and I met, you said something that was really thought-provoking. You asked the question, how does God bleed? How does God die? And we know that God is a spirit, and we can't see him with our eyes. But God as a man who was the image of the invisible God, he can bleed and he can die. And I think that when we look at this next verse that we're going to talk about today, this really captures that Wesley thinks does a really good job here in verse 3. So it says, "He left his Father's throne above so free, so infinite his grace, emptied himself of all but love, and bled for Adam's helpless race." That's us. And then, of course, the refrain is, "'Tis mercy all, immense and free, for, oh my God, it found out me." So he left his Father's throne above.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about Christ taking on, or God the Son taking on flesh, is that for all eternity, he was God.
Yes.
And we know John, of course, the first chapter, John 1:1. He's the Word. He's eternal. He was with God, the Father. He had his hands in creation. He was forever the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity.
Yes.
He was forever, well, not forever, since the beginning of creation, he was the mediator between God and man, even though it was in the fullness of time that he came and was born of the Virgin Mary. And so this verse really captures a few things really well, and maybe we can talk about some of them. That idea of the second person of the Trinity, eternal God, not becoming less than that, but adding to that and taking on human nature. And then what does that mean for him? He humbles himself. He has to humble himself because he shares in his creation. And then the second part of this verse is the idea that he saves Adam's helpless race by becoming a better Adam, the second Adam. And so maybe we just talk a little bit first about this idea of the second person of the Trinity, the eternal God, emptying himself and what it means to empty himself, become a servant, a slave in a sense.
So did he really, when he emptied himself, we're not saying that he ceased from being God.
Right.
That he stopped being God.
Right. In fact, the line says, it's sort of interesting because you could take it away that I don't think Charles means emptied himself of all but love. In other words, love was the only attribute that he brought down from heaven. I don't think that's what he means. But I think the cross really reveals the love of the Father, among other things, lots of other things. But love is maybe one of the first or primary attributes that it shows, again, along with all of the other attributes of God. But when Christ takes on human flesh, he comes still as the eternal Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, full of all of the attributes. And again, it's trying to understand the incomprehensible.
Yeah.
A God who takes on flesh and is still infinite and yet finite. A God who is everywhere present and yet one place at one time. A God who knows all things and yet somehow doesn't.
Yeah. Because he had to learn. I mean, when he was...
He learned.
He came... He entered into the world, you know, through the, really the same way that you and I would enter into the world through our mother's womb.
Yeah.
And there was things, you know, it's, you know, there's a song that was, you know, who can, you know, I'm going to get it wrong, but, you know, who could perceive that we could hold God in our hands?
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, it's like here, you know, Mary, you know, she knew who she was holding.
Yep. That's right.
she did know.
That's right.
Didn't know probably all, the magnitude of, or just the, how much he would, and just what he would do, but she knew who he was, but that he had to come into the world like us, be made like us in every way, except that he didn't sin. He had to. I mean, as he is the second Adam,
right?
The first Adam, you know, was our representative. And, you know, he messed up. And so we, you know, all of his posterity, we all took on that sin nature. And so, you know, we are Adam's helpless race.
Yeah.
Here comes Christ that, you know, throughout all of history, we see, you know, all of the sacrifices, the rituals, all the things that, you know, that man had to do. None of that was going to work. It was God saying, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be the one to come down and, you know, this is, you know, I'm going to be the snake crusher. I'm going to make right what Adam made wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I like the snake crusher.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, and I think there's this idea of active and passive obedience.
Mm.
That's really sort of neat in all this, too. And I think he talks about that, again, not just Christ's finished work on the cross, which is vitally important. But in order for that to mean anything, Christ had to first live a perfect life, a life that was satisfying to God. And, of course, Adam could not do that.
Yeah.
Even in his perfect state, he couldn't do that. And, of course, you and I in our imperfect state with our sinful natures can't even begin to fathom how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Christ, from day one, as Mary holds him until he dies on the cross, he does not have a sinful nature. He doesn't commit any sin. And therefore, he satisfies a life that God requires. And then also for our sake, satisfies a death that God requires, which is just unreal.
It's unreal. It's amazing love.
It is amazing love. This 'tis mercy all immense and free. It's literally infinite. He talks about it in the second line, that his grace is infinite, to the point where we can understand it, and yet it is incomprehensible.
Yeah.
It is wild.
It is wild. Well, and then, yeah, and then that last line, oh my God, it found out me, and I see in Galatians chapter 1, and then remember, we'll get to it. I know where he will, maybe next week we'll talk about, you know, how his conversion through the Moravians and the book of Galatians and Luther, but in verses 15 and 16 of chapter 1, but when it was the good pleasure of God who separated me, even from my mother's womb, and called me through his grace to reveal his Son in me, that I might preach him among the Gentiles. Straightway I confer not with flesh and blood.
Mm. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yes. Well, what we'll do next week is we are going to look into, we'll talk about his conversion and We'll look as we look at verse 4. But this week, we're going to listen to a contemporary version of this hymn. And this hymn was, this was a version by Indelible Grace and Kevin Twitt from Indelible Grace. Kevin is the RUF pastor at Belmont University. You and I actually got to meet him. We ran into him in the streets of Nashville, one of the Sing conferences a few years back.
That's right.
Yep.
It was really good to see him actually this last June at General Assembly as well.
Awesome.
Got to say, he didn't remember me, and he shouldn't have remembered me, but I could pick him out, and I said, hey.
Yeah.
It was good talking with him.
Well, they have their newest album out. They actually recorded an album because that was the 50th anniversary of the PCA, and so I think he recorded an album there, so you should go and check that out. But in the meantime, check out this version of And Can It Be? And until next time, enjoy your lunch break.